Hi everyone, just a quick note before we get to today's podcast. If you could please take 1 minute out of your day to rate and review the podcast, and of course, please subscribe, it would mean a lot. As always, we really appreciate the ongoing support from all of you and the great feedback we are getting. I hope you guys enjoy today's podcast. Cheers. It is a beautiful Monday morning.
Absolutely sensational.
I like him. He's aggressive. He gets in there.
But I do have one more point about Liverpool, though.
Honestly.
Absolutely stunningly beautiful.
Plazenac. Oh, geez.
An absolute beautiful goal.
Welcome to the Trademate Sports Podcast. Hey, guys. Alex here. Welcome to episode 32 of the Trademate Sports Podcast, here with smart sports trader Ryan Bruno. Mate, are you there?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Yeah, how are you?
Very good, mate. Good to have you on. Mate, do you want to just kick things off today? We're going to go through a lot of the UFC stuff that's going on at the moment, since you're one of the rare people that we can get on that can talk a bit of MMA and a bit of UFC, which wanting to do for a long, long time. And later in the podcast, we'll have a look at the UFC 251, which is on Saturday night or Sunday morning for a lot of people. Or, I mean, even for Australians, it's on Sunday. So Sunday afternoon. So, yeah, we'll go through that a bit later, or it's probably more commonly known as UFC Fight Island.
Yep.
but for now, mate, I thought we'd just talk a bit about yourself, and then we can go into maybe just talking a bit of MMA betting in general, because I think that's a popular topic that not really many people have, you know, not talked too much about at the moment, and it seems to be a really rising betting market overall. So, mate, tell us a bit about yourself and, I guess, your blog and your challenge that you're doing at the moment.
Yeah, so I run a blog called thesmartsportstrader.com. I've been betting, like doing the match betting, arbitrage, value betting, a lot of stuff that you guys have already covered. I've been doing that for over 10 years now. So I just created Smart Sports Trader really because I saw that there wasn't a lot of blogs really on sports betting. The only one that I found that was really useful was one called Daily 25, which you might be familiar with. It's a guy called Steve, an Australian guy. And I thought that was a really good blog because I came from a poker background. And in poker, if you go on like the 2+2 forums, I don't know if you're familiar with them, but there was a subsection called Poker Goals and Challenges. And you had just like hundreds of people kind of going through their own challenges, you know. They would start from, you know, playing NL2, so very low micro stakes. And then you'd see guys like 2 years later playing 100 NL. And, you know, they've made like 20K profit. And I really like seeing that progress from start to finish. And with sports betting, you didn't really see that. So after I saw Steve's blog, I was kind of like very motivated to do something similar. And so I've been running that for about 4 years now. I've got my own challenge going on called the Making a Million Challenge, which, you know, it sounds a bit clickbaity, but the whole idea was basically just to make £1 million using sports betting, sports trading, arbitrage, value betting and exploiting casino offers to try and make £1 million over my lifetime. So, you know, I made the title itself a bit clickbaity because you'll probably know yourself with TradeMate, you know, running kind of the marketing side of it. In today's society, you've got to grab people's attention really quickly. So that was kind of the reason for that challenge.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what you mean in terms of our YouTube channel, like the Jonas video we've got up. I think the video is titled like 10K to 1 million. It's, you know, it's by far our most viewed video. And it's thank God for that video, because I think we've probably got like 90% of our subscribers from that one video. So, I understand what you mean, mate. Do you want to then just explain a bit about your MMA background? You've mentioned to me that you've had great success with your MMA betting, and also you used to do a bit of MMA yourself.
Yeah. So I've done pretty well betting MMA, like over a 10-year period. I mean, initially I didn't really do it too seriously, but I got into MMA myself when I was really young. I was training like on a daily basis. As a teenager, I was doing kickboxing, jiu-jitsu, wrestling all separately, and then I kind of rolled it into one. And then started competing at a young age. I was competing when I was about 19. I had a few. They didn't have amateur when I was fighting. It was like 2008. So we had semi-professional. So I fought in semi-professional kickboxing and semi-professional MMA, and then I suffered quite a few knee injuries, so I kind of had to decide whether I still wanted to pursue it or if I wanted to look at something else, which is kind of why I went more into betting as I started playing poker and I started doing match betting quite early on as well, around probably 2011, 2012. So I've done pretty well betting MMA over the years. I've not made Jonas Gelsad money, but I've made like decent money. Like, you know, enough money to go on holiday and stuff like that. So yeah, it's been interesting though, seeing kind of MMA betting from almost the start to where it is now, because there's been quite a lot of progression and it's changed quite a lot.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. I mean, I didn't really start following MMA until the early 2011, I think. And obviously, I didn't even really follow betting until maybe 3 or 4 years after that. And I'd love to hear what you think the betting evolution's been like, because nowadays you hear all sorts of people high up in betting, whether that be, you know, like I'm not sure if it was the CEO of Pinnacle or someone that's really important with Pinnacle, basically saying he's surprised every day about the limits that people are pushing or the liquidity that's getting put through these MMA markets. Can you kind of speak through the evolution, I guess, of MMA betting over the last 10 or so years?
Yeah, so in the early days, the markets were pretty soft, I would say. It seemed like there was just a heavy bias towards guys that were already in the UFC. So even if you had really good guys coming from like Pride, or there was an organization called Shooto, there was like Rumble in the Rock, which was a Hawaiian promotion. There was a lot of like these smaller promotions. Well, Pride wasn't small, Pride was huge, like, but there was still like a heavy bias. And I don't know if that's because obviously a lot of the UFCs were in Las Vegas themselves, so the people that they were familiar with would just get hammered, and there probably wasn't that much sharp money. So like, you get guys coming in. So for example, you get like Quentin Rampage Jackson came over and fought Chuck in the UFC, but those guys had already fought in Pride, and it was pretty clear in that fight that Rampage Jackson was the better fighter. You know, he was taking him down, he was kind of dominating him, and you know, he's probably a bigger power puncher as well. But surprisingly, when the odds came out, it was Liddell that got backed in, and Rampage was an underdog. So stuff like that would happen quite frequently, you know, and that was like I think there was just not a lot of sharp money in the markets initially.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. And you said in one of our articles, one of the first ever articles we did in the Betting Experts series, where we asked people how they find value and stuff like that. And you said there's always lots of value in the MMA markets, because, or maybe not more so nowadays. I definitely saw this a couple of years ago in a couple of cases where the WWE-like promotion really... Yeah. I guess shortens the odds on one side. I mean, the obvious names, your Conor McGregor's, your Ronda Rousey's, there's probably a couple more that have kind of gone past that, gone past just a MMA fan favorite kind of thing. They've gone into the, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. They're just basically like celebrity, like Hollywood kind of famous. How have you seen like any really good examples of how that's affected betting markets?
When I think about recently, probably McGregor, Khabib, but going back, Brock Lesnar was quite a big favorite. You know, he was like, Brock Lesnar's like a superstar, like you say, he transcends MMA and pro wrestling. You know, he's like a well-known figure just throughout the world probably. But you know, his fights were really interesting, because I remember I backed, do you remember Shane Carwin?
Yeah,
I backed Shane Carwin he was, you know, a really, really good fighter. He had a decent background in wrestling. He was a big power puncher. And Lesnar had just beaten Couture. Couture was like small for a heavyweight. Like nowadays, Couture would be small for a light heavyweight probably. So although that win was, you know, impressive, it was more just brute force that he won that fight. So when he fought Carwin, you know, you had Lesnar, who was still pretty green, but obviously very talented and very big and strong. But you had Carwin, who was a lot more refined. You know, his fundamental game was a lot better. His striking was better. He had the wrestling to contend with it. So anyway, he was an underdog in that fight. And remember, I don't know if you remember the fight, but Shane Carwin like beat the hell out of him for the first round, like really badly. It probably should have been stopped. Like at the time, I was in Thailand on holiday, because I can remember this fight because I put a big bet on it. And I told my girlfriend at the time, if, you know, Cowan wins this fight, I'll take you to one of the islands. So, you know, after the first round, I was like jumping, you know, we were in a bar, high-fiving, you know, end of first round, buying shots. And then between the rounds, Cowan's organs basically started to fail. Because he'd exerted himself so much. Apparently, after the fight, he had to go to the hospital. But he'd exerted himself so much in that first round that he was just gassed, you know, he couldn't move. So he came out, Lesnar took him down. and got like an arm triangle. And you know, because I'm a pussy, I took my girlfriend to the island anyway. But you know, it was just a really crazy fight. But anyway, in the next fight, he fought Cain Velasquez. Now, I thought in that first fight, after everyone saw that first round, you would see, you know, that Lesnar, although, you know, a very good fighter, he was still very green and he still had some huge holes. And Velasquez, you know, was a dark horse in that division. They weren't really promoting him at all, but kind of everyone who knew MMA knew he was really, really good. But again, when he fought Brock Lesnar, he was an underdog. It was like a 2.4, maybe 2.5, if I remember. He was a decent-sized underdog, and then he went out, and luckily he had the cardio, unlike Carwin, to, you know, continue and just put a beating on him. But guys like that, guys like, you know, Brock Lesnar, and also, not a guy, but Ronda Rousey, when they get that promotion machine behind them, they're always, and McGregor, they're always probably going to get overbacked. Well, they're much more likely to get overbacked than they are, you know, to not get backed. So.
100%. And like you said, Khabib, Conor was the most earliest, or the latest example I could think of, because when those, and that was only, what, 2 years ago, less than 2 years ago now? Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Khabib, Conor, the first fight. I couldn't believe the odds on Khabib. I thought it was absolutely ludicrous considering he's basically the worst matchup you could have for someone like Conor McGregor when it comes to his wrestling. So I was very surprised about that too, mate. One of the other things you talked about in the article was time between fights and some key traits you've seen there. Can you speak more about that?
It's quite difficult, really. It's just something that differentiates MMA from other sports, is that you don't see the competitors that often. So obviously with every other sport, you know, tennis, golf, football, you're seeing them very regularly. But with MMA, sometimes you won't see a guy for like a year or two. But it can be tough to cap, really, when you're looking for value. Like, for example, there's a guy called Leonardo Santos who's fighting on the prelims of the next UFC card, and he's fought like once in 4 years. So we saw him a year ago fighting a guy called Stevie Ray, and he just blitzed him in the first round. So obviously you've seen a guy fight once in 4 years, and when you did see him fight a year ago, he looked awesome. He blitzed the guy in one round, but does that mean he's got cardio for three rounds? You know, how's his ground game looking? It's just really tough, which is why I tend to, when it's like that, when you see a big gap, is I'd probably always look to back the fighter that's fighting more regularly, if I think there's value there. So I'd just say to be wary, I suppose, of people that have big layoffs.
Yeah. And then also, when people picture a person betting on MMA, they probably don't picture the most like intellectual person, I guess, or maybe just someone who wants to enjoy the fights whilst having a drink. I mean, this might be quite hard to answer, but do you think there is much like smart money in the market? Like, do you think a lot of the money in the market is just from people looking to have a bit of fun and looking to have money on the fight? Or do you think there's some actual legitimate syndicate, pro sports better, that kind of money?
Yeah, I think there's definitely sharp money in the market. It's more so now than ever, I think. I mean, on the prelim fights, the limits early on are not great. So they might not be really looking at them so much till later on in the week, or you know, on fight day. But there's definitely sharp money. Like, odds don't last like they used to. So for example, this weekend you got Amanda Ribas versus Paige VanZant, and I saw that fight about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and Ribas was like 1.25. So I did like that price, but I thought I'd leave it because it's very low odds, and I just didn't want to tie up money for like a month. You know, backing at those short odds. And I thought, given that they're very short odds, it'll probably hang around or the value won't disappear. But then I looked like a week later and she was like 1.2. And then I looked like 2 weeks ago and she's like hovering around 1.12, 1.13. So there's obviously sharp money in the market, because often I'll see something early that I can't get on. It will have just been released at five times and I can't access them being from the UK. And I'll often see that price disappear. So there's definitely sharp money there.
Yeah, okay, cool. And another, I talked about this with a pro sports bettor named Harut Massey and on the podcast maybe 5 episodes ago. And he said he reckons there's more variance in the results when it comes to like a striker versus striker matchup. And also like in comparison to, let's just say like a Damian Maia, Ben Askren fight versus a Darren Till, Robert Whittaker fight. He reckons there's a lot more variance in a striker versus striker matchup. What would you say about that?
Possibly. It depends what weight class. I mean, if you're looking at the like lower weight classes and you look at like the women's weight classes, there's not many knockouts there, so there's not many big shots. So when you've got like, I don't know, Caitlin Chookagian versus Jessica Rye, it's unlikely that they're going to knock each other out. So, but then if you've got like Francis Ngannou against Rosenstrike, like we just saw, there's going to be more variance at the higher weights. So I'd say kind of that's probably something you have to take into consideration when you're betting at the higher weight classes. But at the lower ones, I think it's not as big of an issue. Because even like grappler versus grappler, so let's say, do you remember Dan Kelly versus Shoeface? Antonio Carlos Jr., is that his name?
Oh, yes. Oh, mate.
Do you remember?
Dan Kelly's an Aussie, and he looks like... I think his like nickname is the Dad's Army or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
And I remember him winning that fight because everyone's like, he's gonna get absolutely mauled by this bloke.
Yeah.
Somehow he went on a win streak in the UFC, and no one can explain why, because he looks like, I mean, seriously, he's the kind of guy that most people look at in the cage and go, Jesus Christ, if he can do it, I can do it. But I guess no one really believed that he had a like this incredible background in judo and whatnot. So
exactly. So that was like a guy with background in judo fighting a guy that was a very like a highly rated BJJ guy. So it's two grapplers, but Dan Kelly managed to knock him out. So even when it's grappler versus grappler, there's still that chance that somebody's going to get caught. So you just that's just MMA. You know, it's a chaotic sport. Sometimes you just gotta shake your head. You can make a good value bet, and you can still lose. It's just like any other sport, really.
Yeah. Okay. And so you wouldn't. Would you proceed with caution? Let's just say maybe like a Francis Ngannou is a great example. If Francis Ngannou was pretty short going into the fight with Rosenstrike, would you stay away from that just because there is the likelihood or it's reasonably likely that that could end up in a very variant kind of way, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on the odds, really. Like, I'll never just totally dismiss something until I've seen the odds, you know, or what the KO odds are. I did have a bet in that fight on like Rosenstrike to win by decision, but the odds were like 22-1. So, you know, sometimes you can even just, you know, take the contrarian bet and look at the other side of it, because just because a guy's knocking people out left and right doesn't mean necessarily that he's going to knock the next guy out.
Yeah,
but he did. it's just one of those.
He certainly did, mate. All right, and then is there anything else that you'd like to share with everyone about things that maybe odds compilers are missing out? We talked a little bit about the promotion side of things, and also gaps between fights. But is there anything else you think odds compilers aren't really taking into account when they're setting the lines and prices?
I think sometimes if you look at like the prelim fights or guys that are making the debuts, they tend to value like unbeaten records more than they probably should do. So you might have a guy coming into the UFC who's like 7-0, but he's just been beating like very lower level competition in the Eastern European scene, and then you might have a guy who's like 5-2, but he's been fighting decent guys in like the regional American scene. So that's something that I've noticed quite a bit. But other than that, not really.
Yeah, okay. All right, mate. Well, maybe we'll go through a few examples anyway in these fights that we got a preview. So we've got UFC 251, probably more commonly known as UFC Fight Island. Obviously a big change, mate. Before we go through each fight, there was a big change probably less than 24 hours ago.
Last night. Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got Usman fighting Masvidal now. Luckily, they've been able to replace that with Masvidal and not have to cancel the whole fight. But why don't we just start off with the first fight on the main card? Unless you've got something on the prelims that you think's worth talking about, mate.
Yeah, I had a look last night at the featured prelim, which was Jiří Prochazka versus Volkan Ozdemir. Because I thought that was a fight that was going to be bumped onto the main card, obviously because the Usman Burns fight got removed. So quite like the odds here on Volkan Ozdemir, you can get about 1 point. Well, you can get 159 on Pinnacle, but I saw there was like 1.63 on Betfair. And Volkan Ozdemir is just a really solid fighter. You know, his last fight we saw him fighting Alexander Rakic, who is really talented. I thought Alexander Rakic looked like he could be like a potential title challenger. And Uzdemir put on a really solid performance and he got the win against him. He had a really close split decision loss against Reyes as well, which is really impressive looking at how Reyes fought so John Jones.
Considering, I honestly thought that Uzdemir won that fight. I mean, it was incredibly close. Yeah. I mean, it could have gone either way, but yeah, that is quite incredible when you think back now to think what Reyes just did to Jones.
Yeah, it was really close. And so his opponent, Jiří Procházka, has been fighting in Japan. I don't know if you've seen him. He's been fighting for Rising quite often. But his level of competition has been a lot lower. So his last fight was CB Dolloway, who was out of the UFC a while ago. And CB Dolloway was winning that fight till he got caught and knocked out in the first round. And then before that, I fought Fabio Maldonado, who's another guy that was in the UFC quite a long time ago. And he's way past his best. And he knocked him out as well. And then he beat King Mo, Bellator guy, former Strikeforce fighter. Yep. He's got a win over him, which is pretty decent. And he's also got a win a while ago against Darko Stosic. He's in the UFC right now, big jacked Croatian guy.
Yeah, I think I know his
Not
face.
Familiar with him.
So,
Jiří Procházka, he looks decent. He's got good footwork. He moves around a lot. He keeps his hands quite low, but he uses a lot of movement without actually doing anything. So he feints a lot and he'll throw like flying knees and spinning back elbows and stuff like that. But fundamentally, he's just not as solid as Uzdemir, and he's been fighting a lot lower level competition, really. So I think that's why he's being overrated a little bit here, because obviously he's on a decent winning streak, but Uzdemir would be smoking those guys that Jiří Procházka was fighting. And another thing that I noted down was when you come in from Rising, or you're coming from like these smaller organizations where there's no PED testing, that can always be a factor. Because obviously in Japan, they don't really test for that type of stuff. I'm not saying that he definitely is, but it's something that you've got to consider. So Cameo might look great in Japan.
You're putting in some allegations there.
So it's, his cardio might look great for three rounds in Japan, but when he comes to the UFC, especially with his style, where it's very movement heavy, that could be an issue. And Uzdemir's got really good leg kicks as well. And I saw in the Dolloway fight that Dolloway was really chopping up his front leg with kicks, and he's quite heavy on that. So I like Volkan Uzdemir in this fight. I think the odds are pretty good. I think I'd have him closer to like 1.5 or below. I mean, Procházka might just catch him in the first round, but that's MMA. I'd be pretty happy with a bet on Volkan Uzdemir.
Yeah, I'm just looking at his record again just to refresh myself, and I thought that he's only really lost to, I'd say, like the top of the division. You know, your DCs and also, like
lost
you mentioned,
Smith,
barely
didn't
lost to Reyes. And then the other one he's lost to is Anthony Smith. But even in that fight, I remember he gassed, because I backed Smith in that fight, because I thought, I don't reckon Volkan Uzdemir is going to last much longer than him, and I think he's going to gas before Smith does. And that, because I think from memory, I'm pretty sure Volkan was winning that fight in the first one or two rounds.
Yeah, I think he was, yeah.
Yeah, and then he's obviously, I just bet on the fact that I reckon he was going to gas before Smith. So anyway, but yeah, like I said, he's only really lost to some of the best in the world. But mate, I like that. That's a good tip there. All right, we'll move on to the main card. As you mentioned before, Rebass and Van Zandt. I mean, Rebass now, check the odds. She is down at, she's right down there into the 112s on Pinnacle. Highest odds I can see on Odds Portal here is 1.13 on a Norwegian bookie called Coolbet. So,
Coolbet, right.
Yeah, you'd have to, I mean, do you see any value in those odds at all?
No, like I said, when it opened, though, I was kind of tempted. I was kind of interested why they even made this fight. Like, I thought it was strange matchmaking at first, but then I realized that Paige Van Zandt's on the last fight of a contract, so they're just basically feeding her to Rebass before she goes to Bellator, probably. But yeah, it's just a really tough fight for her. But yeah, like, the money line, I don't see any value in that price now. It's just been hammered too much. I don't think Paige has much of a shot, really. Have you seen Rebass? Are you familiar with Amanda Rebass?
I'm not going to lie, mate. I have barely seen anything of her. and to be honest, I've only really watched... I watched Paige when she first came up, but I guess once I realised it was kind of all just a lot of hype. I mean, she's obviously a decent fighter, and the win I really remember the most was her win over Herring, Felice Herring. And then she also got a decent knockout against Beck Rawlings, but this is a long, long time ago. I haven't really I haven't been following either of these girls much. I don't really have much to say, but I thought the most interesting point about all of this is, like you said before, her contract situation with the UFC. So, I mean, she's you'd have to think if she's really into this, into fighting, and she wants to make a career out of MMA, then she's probably going to come in as determined as ever, because she's got all to fight for. Like, she's, you know, she's got a contract on the line here and a big money offer waiting. If either way, I guess, if she wins, the more money she's going to make. So, that's the most interesting thing I saw coming into this fight.
Yeah, but I just think she's really outmatched in this fight. Ribas is really good. She's really big, really strong. She's got great jiu-jitsu. Her striking looks really sharp. She hits pretty hard. I mean, she put a beating on Mackenzie Dern, and Mackenzie Dern's a really good fighter. And then, you know, Randa Marcos is probably, she's mid-level, I'd say. You may, maybe just underneath the top of the division, but she's very solid, and Ribas put another beating on her. And I just don't really see what Paige is going to do. There's going to be a big power differential. She's a weaker grappler. I've got a bet on this fight. I've got Ribas to win inside the distance at 2.2. which I don't know if you can still get that, but it was on William Hill, which is where I got it. And I think that's a decent bet.
Yeah, next fight on the card is another women's fight, strawweight fight. Mate, I'm bloody excited about this fight, because I was so disappointed with the way this fight ended after Rose's incredible first round in that title fight against Andrade in Brazil. Or was that probably 2 years ago now? Maybe a little bit less. You've got, it's very interesting betting-wise too, because you have to take into account that it was kind of a freak knockout, I guess. Like, it's something that you don't really see very often in MMA, like a slam knockout like that. But at the end of the day, Rose was that was the best Rose Namajunas I've ever seen, and in the first round. And, I mean, it was looking like it was just going to end up with basically a striking mismatch, but things change very rapidly, and the odds makers they've got Rose at 1.5 on Pinnacle, and they've got on Andrade at 2.71, who hasn't fought since she lost to Weili Zhang, basically in a minute or something like that.
Yeah.
So very interesting, mate. What do you think about this one?
So I don't have any bets on this one yet. I rewatched the first fight last night, just to kind of refresh my memory. And like you said, Rose was really lighting her up. She was using really good footwork. She was staying really long. And like Jessica, just couldn't really get to that range where she can hit. But she was landing decent leg kicks throughout the first round, which kind of seemed to start affecting Rose towards the end of it. She did start to slow down a little bit. And like you say, she kept going for the takedowns, and Rose kept defending it with the same Kimura defense. She kept going for that over and over again, so she kept grabbing the arm, and it, you know, it's pretty effective at first, until, you know, it wasn't, and she got, you know, brutally KO'd, getting dumped on her head. So it should be an interesting fight, because I suppose the question mark for me would be, how is she going to defend those takedowns this time? You know, she's not going to go back to that Kimura defense after what happened, so how is she going to defend it, because she doesn't look physically as strong as Jessica Andrade.
No. So
that's kind of a question mark for me. I was looking kind of at reasons to not back Rose, because it just looks, like that's the side to bet on. But I've seen that everyone seems to be backing that side. So obviously you've got to look at the contrarian aspect sometimes. And like also with, you know, the positives from Andrade was those leg kicks and the possible takedown. But this fight's also 3 rounds, so I think that favors Rose as well, because Andrade isn't going to have as much time to kind of wear her down, you know, and implement her kind of fight in the phone box style, you know, where she just gets in there. I'm not sure how big the cage is going to be for this event, though. Is that something you know about?
Yeah, no, I heard they're going back to the normal size now. Yeah,
right.
So
that's probably a plus for Rose as well. Yeah, so that's another plus for Rose. So it's a tough one for me. I think if Rose was a bit bigger, like 1.7, I'd kind of be interested in that. But it seems to be about right for me now.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's hard to, I mean, it. Everything tells you that Rose will win the fight just based on what happened in round one. And also the fact, I just think, like, Trevor Whitman, her coach, is one of the best in the world. And you think that he's going to have her prepared to just, Rose, don't go anywhere near her. Just keep her on the outside. Keep your distance, because from there you're absolutely lighting her up. So it's very interesting. I'd be interested. I'm just going to have a look at the over-under line at the moment. What is it, at 2.5?
Sorry, mate, I lost you there. What's that?
I was just looking at the over-under line right now. It looks like...
I'd imagine it's 2.5.
Yeah, 2.5 overs is 1.65 on Pinnacle. Yeah, I mean, if Rose's... You would think if Rose wins the fight, it's... You can't really... It's hard. I mean, she knocked out Joanna, but that was kind of a freak occurrence, you feel like. So you feel like if Rose does win, it does go the distance?
Most likely, I think she just peppers away with them, like jabs, you know, and straights, and just keeps her at bay. And probably, maybe she might get a cut stoppage. I suppose she looked like she cut her pretty bad in the first fight, but then, you know, you can't really rely on that. So,
no. Yeah,
it's just a miss for me.
Yeah, no, fair enough. But maybe there is a little bit of value there in over 2.5 at 165. But, yeah, maybe elsewhere, because it is a bit of a weird matchup, because they have fought before. All right, mate, we'll move on. I am very excited about that fight. I think that's, honestly, when I look at the card now, maybe not with the Usman Masvidal now in. That was one of my favourite fights, but now I'm probably...
It's a good fight, yeah.
Yeah, it's an awesome fight. All right, mate, we got Aldo and Jan. Oh, I have to say, mate, I'm not excited about this fight. I just can't get excited about it. Jose Aldo, I just feel like he's so undeserving of a title shot. I know that it was a close fight with him and Marais, and a lot of people think he should have got the nod, but mate, I can't get excited about this fight. I'd rather 100% rather be seeing Sterling versus Jan, or even if they made that fight the other week, a title shot, Sterling in Sandhagen. But we'll move on. Betting wise, what do you think, mate?
So when I first looked at the odds, I thought they were pretty wide. Like, you know, Aldo's quite big there. And a lot of people think Aldo's pretty old, but he's still only 33. He's just been so through so many wars and so many fights, and he started fighting really early. But over five rounds, Aldo's output has always been a bit iffy over five rounds. And even in that Marais fight, you saw in the third round, he did slow down. He was pressuring Marais without really doing a lot. And like Rogan was like overselling it, like, you know, Aldo looked like the second coming, but he was still showing the same issues to me. Not throwing enough volume. So in a five-round fight against a guy like Peter Yan, who's, you know, consistent, he's quite small for that weight class, but from what I've been told, like, I know somebody who's actually trained with the guy when they were in Tiger Muay Thai in Thailand, and they just said, you know, the guy can just keep going and keep going and keep going. He's got cardio for days. Mm-hmm. So I expect Yan to be there in his face for five rounds. If I was going to play Aldo, I'd probably look to play him to win by KO, probably early. Or even if you're going to watch the fight and you've got access to live betting, maybe bet him and look how he does over the first two rounds, because you might be able to hedge your position and make a profit anyway. But I think, you know, from the third round onwards, he's going to slow down, and Jan will either stop him in the fourth or fifth round or win a decision. But when I look at the odds, I wouldn't really want to back Jan either at these odds. I'd maybe look to back him if he has like a tough first round. Maybe back him if you can get inflated odds at like 1.7 or above or something like that, if you know that Aldo money comes in because he looks decent in the first round. But it should be a good fight, though. It should be just a stand-up fight.
Yeah, it should be an entertaining fight to watch. I'm just having a look at Peter Yan's record again, and I'd say his most impressive win's Jimmy Rivera, and that was this time last year.
Yeah, it is.
Because the Uriah Faber fight, I mean, I was actually quite disappointed with him in that fight. I thought he could have done a lot better. Like, I think he should have gotten an old Faber who'd been retired for a couple of years out of there a lot quicker. So, yeah, I just can't really get too excited about Jan at that price, personally.
No, it is short. It's very short.
And, I mean, Jose Aldo's, he's a veteran. In terms of experience, I mean, he's got a plethora of more experience than Jan does in this situation. So, I mean, you have to favour Jan just because he's the young fighter coming up, and he's looked very, very impressive coming up. But Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to go into those price, a price of, you know, what is it, 1.42 on Pinnacle. It's hard to back that with much confidence that you've got some value there.
I think Aldo KO is around six. I think though, I think that looks pretty decent because Jan has eaten a few shots previously, like when he fought Dodson, he got caught. Rivera caught him with some good shots. And even though Aldo's volume's not great and he has slowed down a bit, he's still very explosive. Like, we saw him against Moicano. You know, he took Moicano out of there. And against Moraes, he showed, like, bursts where he would really go for it and then he'd relax again. So I think in the first, you know, round or two, Aldo's very live, which is, you know, if I was going to look to bet, I might still bet it. I'd look to back Aldo by KO. Or, like I said earlier, is back him and then look to get out by the second round where his chances start to diminish.
Is there anything,
that'll be my kind of betting strategy.
Is there anything you've seen, mate? Oh, this is a good question to ask at the moment with the whole, I guess a lot of gyms are slightly affected with the whole COVID-19. I don't know if you, have you seen any kind of betting trends ever since they came back from the break? I'm trying to think when they actually came back. It was the Gaethje-Ferguson fight, wasn't it? So it's probably like 2 months ago and we've got lots of fights since then. Is there anything you've picked up in those kind of months that's different to what we normally see?
No, I've not really noticed anything like any strong trends that are kind of out of the ordinary. I mean, it's interesting because everybody's kind of camp is, you know, depending on what country you're from, your access to training is going to be a lot different. So, I mean, that's like a big factor.
Well, interestingly enough, we might as well move on to the next fight with Holloway and Volkanovski, is that Australia's laws around COVID-19 are very, very strict. So I heard in an interview with Volkanovski, maybe this was about 2 or 3 weeks ago, he was talking to Ariel Helwani and he said that it was a really thorough process for him to get the regulations in place to be able to train in his normal gym with his coaches and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting to see how much that affects his this fight for him. Let me just go over the odds. And I am very surprised at the odds here, personally. What have we got? 1.44 for Volkanovski and 2.9 at Pinnacle for Holloway. I mean, it was... Volkanovski did... No, I wouldn't say dominated the fight, but he won a comfortable decision. 2.9 for Holloway. I mean, he's a class fighter, mate. It seems very high.
Yeah, I agree. When I first saw these odds, I was like, you know, I can't really imagine Holloway being those odds against anyone other than, like, McGregor at this weight class. But then I watched an interview yesterday with Holloway talking to Ariel Helwani, and he was talking about his own training, which was quite interesting. And he was saying that he, like, the laws must be, like, really, really strict in Hawaii, because he was saying that his training has mostly been on Zoom. So they've been doing Zoom sessions where his coaches have basically been instructing him. Wow. He's done no sparring at all. So it's, considering he lost the first fight, you know, and he's the guy that needs to make adjustments, that seems like a red flag to me that those adjustments have probably not been made, because it's, you know, if you're not sparring, you're not training. One of the big things was leg kicks that he didn't really address. So, you know, for him to win this fight, I think he has to change his style quite a lot, and from what he said about his training, I just don't really see that happening. And also, in that interview, it was interesting when he was talking about Volkanovski's leg kicks. He wasn't talking about how he'd implemented any strategies to stop them. He was just talking about how he was dancing his after party in the last fight. So to me, that's kind of dismissive of Volkanovski's leg kicks, you know, and that basically won him the fight. So it kind of says to me that he's probably not going to really address that factor, you know, and that was such a big factor in the first fight.
Yeah, well, that was what I for going into this fight, I think Volkanovski just has a huge upper hand, because the way you look at it is you think, I mean, Max, the first thing he would do, like going back to the drawing board, is like, how on earth am I going to stop those leg kicks? And then Volkanovski's obviously preempting that, so he's thinking, all right, well, he's obviously going to work on those leg kicks. But now that he's, you know, looking out for those leg kicks, that opens up other weapons for him with his hands, or maybe a head kick, you know, body kick, those kind of things. So I don't have much to go off here, but I feel like most of the time in rematches, when it was reasonably one-sided, nothing really changes the second time. Do you have much to say about that?
No, I mean, there's been a few ones, I suppose, like Chuck and Couture going back. They had a trilogy, didn't they, where they kind of swap wins. Obviously, GSB, but that's kind of a shock win when Sarah beat him. You know, GSB came back and won that pretty handily. And I suppose when Joanna fought Rose the second time, that fight was pretty close, but then the first one was a KO. So, yeah, like you say, when it's like a five-round decision where one guy's won it pretty comfortably, you don't often just see that flip. And especially in such a short space of time as well, you know, Holloway's not even had time to really develop a different game, has he? It's, you know, it's quite a quick turnaround.
Yeah. So do you, I mean, we both said that we were shocked by the odds at 2.9 for Holloway, but are you still hesitant, or do you think it's worth a play at 2.9?
I don't know. Probably, it'd probably be a live bet for me. I'd wait to see how Max is looking in the first round, you know, see if he does address those leg kicks. Because then that was the biggest factor for me in the first fight, was those leg kicks. And also, I think with no crowd as well, Volkanovski is the one that throws a lot more power. And I think when the judges are looking that with no crowd, you know, when you hear kind of the clattering of those big shots against Holloway's pitter-patter volume striking, I think that's going to leave more impact. So, I mean, I don't want to back Volkanovski at like 1.4. I did get some money on him at 1.53. But I'll probably look to like hedge that now and make an arbitrage bet. Because it's at the point now where I don't think the value's on the other side. So I've not really looked at the props, but I think it's just likely to go to a decision, and I think that's factored in.
Yeah, I'd be interested. Yeah, like you said, I'd like to see the odds on Volkanovski by decision, because, I mean, I think in an interview with Helwani, I heard him say that he was really searching for the knockout this time, but, I mean, Holloway is the chin of all chins, so it's very hard to see that happening.
I mean, he's never been stopped by strikes, right?
Sorry, say that again.
I don't think he's ever been stopped by strikes, has he? I mean, Poirier stopped him, but that was a submission. So.
Yeah, not off the top of my head, mate. I don't think so, no. Yeah, maybe if it was, it was a long, long time ago. All right, mate. Well, should we talk about the main event? It's for me, it's got a lot more exciting, at least in the last 24 hours. I was struggling to get excited about it just on the basis that Burns was kind of like the third man, the third most deserving man behind Masvidal and Leon Edwards of a title shot. So it was going to be a good fight. Yeah. And especially after seeing what he did to Woodley a couple of weeks ago, it was always going to be a very exciting fight. But I think this is a lot more exciting. Out of all the markets we've looked at, for me personally, I like this price on Masvidal at 3.6 on Pinnacle. I'm trying to see where else it might be higher. Just from what I'm seeing now, I can't really see anything else higher than 3.6. What do you think?
I think if you're going to back Masvidal, you've probably got to take... Well, you don't have to, but I'd probably look at taking him by KO just because it's such short notice. And Usman's style, you know, it's a grinding style. He's going to push him up against the cage. He's probably going to wear him out with knees. He's going to take him down. I imagine he's going to take him down. And I think, you know, Masvidal's chances of winning this fight, you know, I don't think they're that great, to be honest. I mean, he's a good striker. You know, we've seen him take out Askren really impressively. He beat the hell out of Nate Diaz pretty easily. But Usman's just a step up from those guys. You know, Usman's, you know, he's big for that weight class. He's elite. He's been fighting the best guys. I mean, Masvidal used to fight at lightweight. I mean, he's still pretty big at welterweight, but I think Usman's going to be able to handle him. So I think Masvidal's, you know, where he's going to do well is obviously going to be on the feet, but I'm not sure how long he can really keep it there. And in the clinch as well, Usman's such a good clinch fighter that I just think it's just a really tough matchup for him.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And if you assume that if Usman's not stupid and he fights a smart fight, that he can basically wrestle him and wear him out, and maybe towards the end of the fight, Masvidal's power will be nullified. But yeah, like you said, maybe like if you're looking for some decent odds, maybe you just go Masvidal knockout in the first maybe one or two rounds, and that might be the only time where he can get the victory.
Yeah, because I think if it is likely to go in the third, fourth, you know, fifth round, then it's likely that Usman's going to have been, you know, using his pressure, playing his pressure game, and just wearing Masvidal down, really. And because it's short notice as well, if it wasn't short notice, then I'd probably be kind of more tempted to bet on the Masvidal side. But as it is, I'd probably prefer to be on Usman, but I'd want higher than Pinnacle's 1.32 odds at the moment. I put some money up on Betfair at 1.41. And like £10 got taken, so hopefully some money comes in on Masvidal and I can get some the other way. But I think, you know, for Usman to lose this fight, it's just going to have to be somewhat shocking. Like, you know, the way that Masvidal caught Askren, you know, that big flying knee, it's gonna have to be something like that, because I think that Usman's just too big, too strong. I just think overall he's the better fighter.
Yeah, no, definitely. But one thing I would like to just put out there is that He did obviously take a decent bit of damage in that last fight too against Colby.
Oh, that's Robinson. True. Yeah.
That was a probably 6 months ago by the time they fight. But I mean, maybe something to note. And also, Colby did. I watched it briefly the other day. I watched the first one or two rounds, and Colby did rock him a couple times. And in terms of power, Colby's right down the bottom of the scale in terms of maybe not power, but the amount of power he puts on his punches. Normally, he takes a couple of percent off just because he's more of a high volume approach. So Masvidal possesses a lot more power than Usman. So maybe, I don't know. I feel like I might be going for like a round one or two knockout by Masvidal. It'd be quite funny to watch too.
I mean, you could play him and then see how the first round goes. You know, if Usman's able to kind of get that cage control, and get his wrestling going, then I can't imagine his odds are going to drop too much. You know, they might go to like 1.25 or something, so there's not going to be a huge drop, whereas, you know, Masvidal's chances of winning are going to be by KO, you know, so if he's going to catch him, he's going to catch him, you know, and then you're going to win your bet. So that, you know, that could be a way of looking at it. It just depends if you bet it live or not. Like for me, in being in the UK, if I want to bet something live, I've got to stay up till like, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, and then it starts and then it finishes at like 5:30, so it's really, you know, it's not something that I do often, but for this card, I probably will look at live betting.
Yeah, no, good call, mate. And thanks for coming on. It's been good to get some insight into MMA betting in general, and also getting some insight into a main card. And there's lots of fights coming up on Fight Island. I think it'd be good to have you back on, maybe talk a bit less MMA or just in general. Maybe, well, I mean, I'm sure I can think of some more MMA questions to ask you, because there's, I think it's a, although there's lots of liquidity there at the moment, or growing liquidity, it still seems like a market that's not 100% solved compared to maybe like a EPL market or a, you know.
No, definitely. Football. Yeah, there's still lots of value, I think. You know, and there's quite a few people that do well from MMA betting compared to other sports as well. If you look at kind of records of tipsters and stuff, you'll see. There's quite a few guys that are doing well in MMA betting compared to, like, you know, beating the sharp markets at football, where it's extremely hard. You've got a very small percentage, but so it kind of does show that these markets are still very profitable.
Yeah. All right, cool, mate. Where can we, if people are looking to follow your blog or follow your journey, mate, where can people find you?
You can find me on www.smartsportstrader.com. I do have Twitter and stuff as well, but can't remember it at the time. But you can find it through the website if you want to have a look.
Mate, I've tagged your Twitter in so many articles, mate. I probably know it better than you. I think it's SM Sports Trader. So there you go.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
At SM Sports Trader. I'll promote it for you, mate. But yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. Too much on what podcast is coming next. I think next week we might get another EPL betting preview with George Gamble up next week, so that'll be good fun. But other than that, thanks for listening. Make sure you do a quick rate and review of the podcast. Subscribe to us wherever you listen to your podcast. And if you're looking to implement some of the strategies we talked about, we don't have MMA betting on the software at the moment. And I don't think it's something we would implement, just because it doesn't really provide too many trades. Currently, maybe in the future, but if you're looking to implement some of the strategies we talk about, make sure you start a free week trial with Trademate Sports value betting software, and start your journey. But mate, thanks for coming on once again.
No, cheers.